Headlines: several Palestinians are killed in new Israeli attacks on Gaza, where the death toll has already passed the 24,600 mark. Yemeni army says it targeted an American ship in the Gulf of Aden with appropriate naval missiles in support of the Palestinians in Gaza. The Iraqi Prime Minister once again calls for the withdrawal of U.S. forces from his country, saying it is crucial for Iraq's security and stability. Hello, everyone. Now 105 days into the Israeli war on the Gaza Strip, and the regime continues with its carpet bombing campaign across the besieged Palestinian territory. In the latest such attacks, at least 5 people were killed in an Israeli airstrike on a residential building in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. Another 12 people lost their lives in a strike at an apartment near Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. Latest casualties bring to over 180 number of Palestinians killed in Israeli raids across Gaza in the past 24 hours. Raids are conducted under cover of a near-total communications blackout. Overall death toll from the regime's campaign of genocide has passed 24,600 mark. Meanwhile, a UN rights expert says that what Israel is doing in Gaza is a violation of international law and highly illegal. And now joining us from Cape Town for more on the story is Mohammed Khalid Sayed, South African politician and youth activist. Hello, sir. Pleasure to have you on the program. Your initial thoughts on the atrocities after 105 days taking place against the Palestinians of Gaza.
Thank you very much for having me. Firstly, we have to extend our condolences and sympathy and solidarity with the people of Gaza, but also express to them that we are inspired, that in spite of these atrocities and genocide, and I'm from South Africa, my government in South Africa, led by our party, the African National Congress, took the bold decision of taking Israel to the International Court of Justice for genocide. Because this is a genocide, the pictures are here, the death toll speaks to it. But even within that context, the people of Gaza and the resistance and Hamas in particular have put up a brave fight and they continue to resist. And we want to commend them for that. And also, I am on Press TV. Press TV, which is a TV station affiliated with the government of the Islamic Republic of Iran. We want to commend the role played by the Islamic Republic of Iran in supporting the resistance, in highlighting these crimes, in supporting even South Africa's application at the ICJ. Without Iran, this particular axis, giving support to the suffering people of Gaza and to the resistance in Gaza, will not be possible.
And, sir, and much power to the government there in Pretoria bringing this case in the ICJ. But there's a near complete communications blockout right now on Gaza. It's the 7th one since October 7th. It's been the longest one. It's impacting first responders, UN missions that are trying to help nearly 2 million displaced people in Gaza seek refuge from one shelter to the next. My question to you, what's the point of the regime carrying on a communications blackout this long? To what end could it benefit the regime, and to what price for the desperate people of Gaza?
The aim of the Israeli regime in carrying out this particular blackout is so that they can suppress the information coming out of Gaza, so that their crimes, their atrocities, their genocide cannot be sent out to the rest of the world. But still, the information is at our disposal. So that's their objective. But also, you know, crazy regimes like the Israeli regime, especially the one led by Benjamin Netanyahu, does not always even think rationally, even in terms of their own interests. Yes, the interest is to obliterate, to flatten Gaza, to kill each and every Palestinian living in Gaza. But the blocking out of communication, they see it as part of that, but they do not understand that this is simply backfiring. It's making the Israeli regime yet again look like a regime that wants to close out each and every communication, from a regime that claims to be the only modern democracy in the Middle East, a regime that is supported by the United States, who claims to be this great democracy and promoting human rights across the world, to block out communication. So they're actually further embarrassing themselves, and they are enhancing the case that we have even put out there as a South African government. So we must not be surprised. These are the actions of a murderous regime. This was a similar situation that happened during the days of apartheid. As the apartheid regime in South Africa was collapsing, they were also blocking off all forms of information. So this is the natural steps of a dictatorial regime, of a bloodthirsty regime that is on its way down.
And speaking of, to your point, stifling voices and trying to cover for the atrocities and the information coming out of Gaza, there have been over 120 journalists killed since October 7th. From your perspective, is this collateral damage or deliberate? And explain why you feel whichever one you choose.
Now, this is not collateral damage. Israel claims to have the greatest amount of precision when it does its targeted killings. Israel does not involve itself in collateral damage. Every piece of damage, every murder is deliberate. They killed Shireen Abu Akleh a few years ago of Al Jazeera, and I must say, a Christian Palestinian journalist. It's not just a Muslim issue. The reason for killing journalists is, again, they want to suppress the truth. And I want to add that this regime is killing journalists. It's a regime that is supported by those who claim to be the bastions of free media, the bastions of those who are promoting transparent and robust journalism all across the world, by the bastions of Western liberalism. So further, yet again, this particular moment in history now is exposing truth and justice. It's exposing the hypocrisy of the Western world.
And so before we let you go, you mentioned that the regime is capable, has the most sophisticated weapons that it gets from the U.S., very capable of using precision-guided munitions to go after just Hamas, but it chooses, according to the South African case there at the ICJ, to use dumb bombs on tightly, densely populated civilian areas. Why?
That is because they want to kill civilians. They want to ethnically cleanse Gaza and the whole of Palestine of Palestinians. And that is why South Africa has gone to the ICJ. We are not saying that the Israelis are responsible just for war crimes or they want to kill Hamas. No, they want to ethnically cleanse the land of Palestinians. And that's why they are doing that.
My goodness. Thank you, Mr. Mohammed Khalid Said, South African politician and youth activist. Stay safe, sir. Pleasure to have you on. Joining us there from Cape Town. Meanwhile, Palestinian residents of the Nusayrat refugee camp in the middle of Gaza speak about the situation they face following the withdrawal of Israeli forces from their area.
This occupation army is a failing army. We are civilians who were staying safely in our homes, but they found them raiding us without warning and striking us with shells and rockets. Miraculously, we fled our homes. They said there are tunnels over here, but there's no such thing.
After the withdrawal of the occupation forces, the situation in the market and Nusayrat is good. After a continuous bombing by the occupation forces, buildings and houses in general were destroyed. Roads, infrastructure, sewage and wells were also destroyed in the Nusayrat refugee camp. But thank God, after the withdrawal, the situation is getting better and people started to return.
Nusayrat camp was one of the steadfast camps and was an obstacle to the enemy vehicles. The massive scale of destruction that was left after the withdrawal of the 36th Division, as you can see, the infrastructure, the communication and internet networks and all the sewage networks were struck and flattened, and some bodies of martyrs are still under the rubble.
Now, the Israeli regime has confirmed the new military losses and clashes with Palestinian resistance fighters in Gaza. Military says Israeli troop died of wounds he sustained in a battle in southern Gaza on Wednesday. 3 reservists were also wounded seriously in the north and center of the besieged enclave. According to the Israeli military, a total of 191 soldiers have been killed in its ground invasion of Gaza. Palestinian resistance groups, however, say that the death toll is much higher as Israel hides the real number of its military losses. In the meantime, the military wing of Palestine's Hamas resistance movement says that their fighters targeted a Merkava tank with 3 soldiers aboard. Al-Qassam brigades also detonated the mouth of a tunnel in a Gaza City neighborhood as a group of Israeli infantrymen were there. The Yemeni army says it targeted an American ship in the Gulf of Aden in response to U.S.-UK strikes against the Arab country.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a targeting operation against an American ship Kame Ranger in the Gulf of Aden with several appropriate naval missiles, resulting in direct hits.
Spokesperson General Yahya Sari there described as inevitable Yemen's retaliation for the aggression by the U.S. and U.K. He added, any new strike on Yemen will not go unanswered or unpunished. U.S. has confirmed the attack on its ship. The Pentagon says it was a third attack by the Yemenis this week on U.S.-owned vessels in and around the Red Sea. That's a crucial shipping lane for international trade, where tensions have been spiking over the last 2 months. Yemen has been attacking Israeli-linked ships in retaliation for the regime's genocide in Gaza. Tensions in the Red Sea have escalated further in the past week after the U.S. and the United Kingdom began airstrikes on Yemen, citing what they call threats to international shipping. Our correspondent, Abdul Latif Al-Washali, earlier joined us out of Sana'a for more on tensions in the Red Sea.
Even through the 9 years of war that the Yemenis have been facing from the Saudi-led coalition, which was backed by Washington and also the UK, Yemenis have never attacked any ship in the Red Sea. They did nothing, but now they are doing this just to protect the Palestinian people, to support the Palestinian people who are facing a genocidal war being carried out by the Israeli regime. The Yemenis will do this just to support the Palestinian people. The Yemenis did nothing for themselves, but they are doing this attacks for the Palestinian people. If you keep following the news, you will know that the U.S. is attempting to turn the region into a battlefield, and they are just pushing the countries of the region to fight each other, as they did during 7 or 9 years of war by pushing Saudi Arabia to fight the Yemeni people, to kill the Yemeni people, and now they are just attempting to support the Israeli regime by pushing the region into a new regional war. All what they care about is only the Israeli regime. Why don't they just stop the war that is happening against the Palestinians in Gaza? This will, of course, protect the international navigation and international shipping. But they don't want to do this. They just keep attacking the Yemeni people, even when they realize that these attacks will never stop the Yemeni army from attacking the Israeli vessels. The attacks or the strikes of the UK and the U.S. did nothing, but they have just pushed the Yemeni army to include now the American and the British ships in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. So why would they do such thing when they know that it will not be successful, according to their statements?
And thousands of people hit the streets of Yemen's northern city of Sa'ada to voice support for Palestinians in the wake of Israel's genocidal campaign on Gaza. Demonstrators waved Palestinian and Yemeni flags, chanting, U.S. is the mother of terrorism. The slogan is a reminder of Washington's unequivocal support for the Israeli regime, as well as its aggression against Yemen. Protesters also slammed the U.S. move to redesignate Yemen's Ansarullah movement as a terrorist group. For weeks, Yemenis have been holding nationwide rallies every Friday in a show of support for the people of Gaza. And as we just mentioned, the U.S. has relisted Yemen's Ansarullah movement as a global terrorist group over attacks against Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea. Yemeni citizens, though, have spoken about the U.S. move, as well as ongoing strikes by Washington and London against their country.
They can hit as much as they want. We are ready to support the Palestinian cause until the last breath. We, along with the generations after us, will continue to confront them.
Their repeated attacks will never deter us. America has been striking us for a long time. The aggression against us is veiled under the name of the Saudi and Emirati aggression, but America has been bombing us for a long time.
This decision is a political move to cover up Israel's crimes. Claiming that we are a terrorist group is to justify the airstrikes on Yemen and Palestine.
This decision is not new. It's not an objective decision and is not based on any real evidence, because this decision was made before. This classification was approved during the era of former US President Trump, then the Houthis were removed from the terror list. This proves that it was a decision that was not based on practical reality. Rather, this indicates that the US makes these decisions to blackmail people and to use the decision like a sword against anyone who stands against American and Israeli interests.
This classification on the list of terrorism is under our feet. We don't care about it. We have fought wars for 9 years, and from the first day, we have been attacked by the US, Israel, and Britain, and this is not counting their agents from the Arab countries.
We say to them, if Ansarullah are classified as a terrorist group, then what about Israel? What about the US that kills innocent Palestinian children and that destroys homes above their residents? What do we say about them? Are they not our Arab brothers? And is Palestine not Arab like us? Isn't it our right to stand up and defend our Palestinian people with all we've got? Palestinians are our brothers and we will not be silent about them and we will not let them down.
Iraq's prime minister has reiterated his government's opposition to the presence of U.S. forces in the country. Mohammed Shia al-Sudani says American troops must leave as Daesh is no longer a threat to Iraq.
The reasons for the presence of coalition's forces were to confront Daesh. Today, the security situation, to the testimony of all specialists in Iraq and France, Daesh does not pose a threat to the Iraqi state. Today, after the repercussions and attacks on the Iraqi security headquarters, we have the right to start this dialogue immediately in order to reach an agreement on arranging a timetable for the end of the mission of international advisors.
Sudani was addressing a panel discussion at the World Economic Forum in the Swiss city of Davos. He said ending U.S. military presence is crucial for Iraqi security and stability. His remarks came as U.S. bases in Iraq have been repeatedly attacked by Iraqi resistance groups over Washington's support for Israeli genocide in Gaza. In response, U.S. military has launched attacks on Iraq's popular mobilization units, killing a number of their members, including commanders. The Iraqi government has slammed U.S. attacks as a violation of the country's sovereignty. Last year, Sudani vowed before the Iraqi parliament to put an end to U.S. military presence in the country. That's a wrap for your latest, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye.
A diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
the limelight.
Since October 7th attack, the Zionist settlers, who in recent years have received hundreds of millions of dollars in state funding, have carried out more than 200 attacks on Palestinians. And that's according to B'Tselem and Yesh Din, two human rights groups documenting attacks in the West Bank. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Middle East Eye wrote, for most of its history, Nablus, which lay on the trade route between Damascus, Al-Quds and Cairo, was a principal center of trade and manufacture. The Palestinian Stock Exchange was based there. Today, however, its fortunes have drastically changed. Today, it's a city under siege, surrounded on all sides by illegal Zionist settlers and military bases. The roads leading to and from Nablus conceal a scandal about which the international community has remained largely silent. The road south of Ramallah runs through Huwara, an occupied Palestinian village that for years, well before the October 7th attacks, was blighted by Zionist settler violence. In February last year, settlers tore through this village, torching cars, setting farmland on fire, and vandalizing homes in an act that was roundly condemned as a program. Since then, the situation for many Palestinians there hasn't changed for the better. For Palestinians attempting to journey in and out of Nablus, many have to take detours to avoid encounters with Israeli regime troops. More seriously, there is the risk of running into armed Israeli settlers. Since October 7th, the settlers, who in recent years have received hundreds of millions of dollars in regime funding, have carried out more than 200 attacks on Palestinians, and that's according to B'Tselem and Yesh Din, two human rights groups documenting attacks in the West Bank. In the same period, the Zionist regime forces have killed more than 200 people, more than 25% of whom are children, according to the United Nations. Since the Oslo Accords, the number of Zionist settlers in the West Bank has grown from about 260,000 to nearly 700,000, according to figures from the Israeli pressure group Peace Now. Zionist settlements are considered illegal under international law, but successive Israeli governments have continued to expand them in violation of international law and the Oslo Accords. Palestinians across the West Bank fear that the increase in settlements and outposts threaten not only the viability of their future state, but also their livelihoods. In November, the surge in the Zionist settler attacks forced many Palestinians to cancel their olive harvest, traditionally a joyful time when families go out into the hills to pick the fruit from gnarled ancient olive groves. For years, the Zionist settlers have descended from their hilltops, fortresses, and come to destroy the prized olive trees. either burning or hacking them down or poisoning them with chemicals. Amid the war on Gaza, many have become more brazen in their assaults. We learned how farmers have been sprayed with machine gun fire to force them off their land so the Zionist settlers could harvest the olive trees themselves. Such attacks have proven to be a death knell for rural economy, which has depended on agriculture for centuries. Families across the West Bank, already hunted by previous displacement, told Middle East Eye that they feared that such crimes, which the Zionist regime's judicial system fails to investigate properly, could usher in another period of forcible dispossession. In Balata, one of the most densely populated refugee camps in Palestine, many told Middle East Eye that following the October 7th, they feared a repeat of the Nakba, or catastrophe, as it is known in English, when at the time of the establishment of the fabricated regime of Israel, more than 700,000 Palestinians were driven from their homes by Zionist forces, never to return. The signs of the destruction caused by constant Zionist military raids are clear to see. A Palestinian man who requested anonymity told Middle East Eye, "Last night we were bombarded by an Israeli aircraft. Then the drones, the snipers and bulldozers also came. At the site of the raid, the winter rains and mud made the scene appear at all more apocalyptic." Among the still smoldering ruins were the remains of a grenade and an unexploded rocket. Another Palestinian man lamented what remained of his bedroom, a heap of rubble with the exterior walls riddled with bullets. Nearby, a group of boys showed Middle East Eye that happened to their home. Israeli forces reportedly ransacked property, leaving toys and clothes scattered everywhere. One of the boys said, "They hammered our wall in. They said they wanted to look for weapons inside, but there is nothing here. They smashed our appliances just to upset us. They also tore up children's books and notebooks. That's what they do. They want to scare us, humiliate us." At this point, another man interjected, "They put us face to the wall with rifles pointed at our heads. They said, 'Are you happy with what you did on October 7th? Have you seen Gaza now? You will be next.'" Several released Palestinians have recounted harrowing stories from when they were detained by the Zionist regime troops in Balata. Anas, a 27-year-old, was kicked in the face during his most recent arrest and was ordered by one of the Israeli troops to lick his boots after it was stained with his blood. Middle East Eye spoke to his family since Anas was still recovering in the hospital. They lashed out at the Zionist regime's heavy-handed tactics across the West Bank. Adhan, his younger brother, told Middle East Eye that during the raid on their property, his sister, who was cradling a baby, was also hit and abused by the Zionist regime troops. Adhan said, "We yelled at the soldiers, 'How can you hit a woman with a baby?' So they rounded up all of us men, took us to the street, handcuffed us, and put us face down on the ground. They started beating us. My brother Anas was the hardest hit. They kicked him so many times in the face that he lost consciousness. Despite this, one soldier ordered him to lick the blood off his boot. But my brother was now unresponsive. He was unconscious. We called for an ambulance, but they blocked it, preventing any help from coming." And all these abuses and humiliations took place in the presence of children, who were terrified and screaming as they watched on. One of the children, Ahmad, struggled to hold back his tears as he recounted what happened. He said, "There were soldiers, they were beating the men hard." As he struggled to finish his sentence, his mother intervened. "During those moments, they would say things to us women that I can't repeat, horrible insults that hurt a lot. I'm not comfortable telling these things publicly. However, I know that it is important for people to know. The world needs to know." Another man said, "The Israeli soldiers know very well that what offends Muslim women. The insults they hurl at them are so horrible that no woman will ever repeat them. Such is shame."
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Israel is pressing ahead with its relentless aerial and ground attacks on Gaza in the 100 days of the U.S.-backed Israeli genocide in the besieged strip. 24,000 Palestinians have been killed, mostly women and children. Schools, mosques, churches, refugee camps and hospitals are a frequent target of strikes. Half of the population are starving and millions have been displaced. This is why resistance fighters in Gaza, the occupied West Bank, and other parts of the region are inflicting heavy blows on Israel, and pro-Palestinian protests around the world have not lost any momentum. Our guests for this edition of The Spotlight are Director of the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, Zafar Bangosh, joining us from Toronto. And political commentator Shabir Rizvi, joining us from Chicago. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Zafar Bangosh in Toronto. Now, the total death toll from Israel's 100 days of incessant bombing and attacks is nearing the 24,000 mark. Over 60,000 people have also been injured. Schools, mosques, churches, hospitals, ambulances, they've been a frequent target of the strikes, which have left only a handful of medical facilities partially operational. Palestinian officials say only six ambulances are still operational in the entire Gaza Strip. Only six ambulances? Please share with us your perspective on the horrors that Gazans have been enduring for 100 days.
Let me add that the total casualties are probably more than 30,000, not just 24,000, because there are approximately 7,000 people that are under rubble, that have not been dug out because there isn't any heavy machinery. And even if people go to dig these bodies out, they are attacked by Israeli snipers. So in that sense, the death toll is much higher. With respect to these horrendous casualty figures and then the death and destruction that the Zionist regime has inflicted upon the Palestinian people, it is absolutely, they are perpetrating a genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza. And that's what we hear the case that South Africa has so eloquently presented in the International Court of Justice. And Israel has trotted out all the old lies, which have no basis in fact. The fact that, you know, the Zionists have destroyed most of the 66 hospitals in Gaza. The most horrifying part of this is that there is no anesthesia. And UNICEF has reported that approximately 1,000 children have had to have their limbs amputated without anesthesia. Can you imagine the horror of that situation? And the bodies that are lying in you know, the bodies that are in the buildings, etc., stray dogs are attacking them. So this is an absolute catastrophe. for the Palestinian people in Gaza that the Zionist war criminals are inflicting upon them, but the Zionists are not succeeding in their military mission, and that is to wipe out Hamas. Fighting is still going on. Hamas is still confronting the Zionist war criminals and still inflicting casualties upon them. So in that sense, Israel's actual military and political objectives have failed.
Shebi Rizvi, since the beginning of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, the Israeli regime has sought to dismantle the resistance groups there. After 100 days of lethal and deadly attacks, Palestinian resistance groups are fighting back, strong both inside and outside of Gaza. Those were statements that were echoed by the spokesperson of the Al-Qassam Brigades, Abu Obaida, who we were listening to just a little earlier. The Al-Qassam Brigades, they've released footage of attacks on invading Israeli troops and military vehicles in Khan Yunis. The Al-Quds Brigade said it targeted several Israeli settlements. So that means that the Israelis have not achieved their military objectives. Even the Israelis are admitting this. So other than becoming record holders for murdering children, what have the Israelis achieved?
Yes, thank you for having me. In the 100 days of this genocidal massacre that's been, you know, forced upon the Palestinians, what we've seen is a total failure of the Zionist entity. This is from the military perspective, in which they've had multiple brigades retreat, including the Golani Brigade, which is one of their most infamous brigades. It's been in operation since 1948. We see new videos of Israeli troops being confronted point blank every day, released by the Al-Qassam Brigades. There's reportedly over 4,000 permanently disabled Israeli troops, and this is just the military component. We also have to examine the economic component, where the Israeli economy is basically plummeting day after day to the tune of millions of dollars. The port of Eilat, which has been targeted by various resistance forces, including the Iraqi resistance, now being able to reach that far is quite a feat of its own, has shut down the port entirely. It's down 85%. And then to the north, you have Hezbollah clearing out entire settlements, which is also drastically not only impacting the economy, but the actual morale of Israeli settlers. They do not feel safe there. They have evacuated. And over a quarter million alone have been evacuated from the north. Of course, they're going to, dilute these numbers of how many people actually left, how many settlers actually left occupied Palestine since October 7th. But all this to say, they have a diminishing, diminishing workforce and economy. And lastly, very lastly, politically, they're facing international condemnation. They're being taken to court on the charges of genocide, and whether those charges stick or not, that's yet to be determined. But the fact is, they were taken to court. They have international condemnation. They have millions of people across the West marching against them. So the entire view of how Israel has carefully created itself over the years is now being exposed, and they are very much facing an existential crisis.
Zafar Bangosh, the Hamas representative in Lebanon, says that Israel has failed to achieve any of its objectives despite this genocide, a war that's something we've been discussing with you and our guest in Chicago. Osama Hamdan said Israel has failed to break the determination of the resistance of Palestinians. Also earlier today, Hezbollah leader Said Hassan Nasrallah described the Gazans' resistance as legendary. Now, resistance has been described as the only viable option for Palestinians. In spite of all the efforts to weaken it, why is the resistance front still thriving, not just in Palestine, but also in the region as a whole?
First of all, let's look at the resistance inside Palestine. They have endured 75 years of Zionist brutality, and they've had enough of it. They're simply not prepared to put up with this anymore, and they're prepared to make any sacrifice and every sacrifice in order to achieve their freedom from the Zionist occupiers. The reason that the Zionists have failed in Gaza is that over the years, the Palestinian resistance there has dug hundreds of miles of tunnels. And in fact, even the Israeli defense minister in the war cabinet, Yoav Gallant, admitted a few days ago that the Israeli army has achieved its control in northern Gaza, but on the ground. And of course, he basically was referring that underground, Hamas is still going strong. And this is, in fact, a brilliant strategy that Hamas adopted, in order to dig these hundreds of miles of tunnels. And any time that the Israeli army has tried to penetrate those tunnels, they've been blown up, and the Israelis have suffered massive casualties. So in the sense of the resistance having been able to withstand all of this Zionist onslaught, despite the fact that the Israeli army is the most heavily armed army in the entire region, indicates that the resistance is totally determined. A fundamental factor of their determination is that it's not only the fact that they are on the right side of history, but the fact that they are motivated by Islamic principles, and they consider death to be martyrdom, and they welcome it. Whereas the Zionist thugs want to live in this world, they are terrified of dying. And so in that sense, the psychological makeup of the resistance vis-a-vis the Zionist army is also extremely important to take into consideration. Now, you mentioned about the external factor. Of course, you know, as Shabir mentioned, the Iraqi resistance firing missiles at Haifa and shutting it down. We also need to take into account the brilliant operations of Ansarullah in Yemen, who have actually targeted Israeli-bound ships and Israeli-owned ships. And even though the United States and Britain have entered the fray, entered the war on behalf of the Zionists, I mean, they are supplying them weapons and providing them diplomatic cover and so on, and now they are militarily involved in it. But the Americans will also face that defeat, because Ansarullah cannot be defeated. They have this experience for 7 years fighting against the Saudi and Emirati aggressors, and they have shown that they have the determination and the will to confront this. So in that sense, even though, can you imagine that, you know, Americans keep on saying that we don't want the war to be to spread in the region, and yet they're directly involved militarily in spreading the war. And so in that sense, I think the effort by the Ansarullah is a very important component, and it has cost the Zionists enormously in terms of losses, in terms of trade.
Shabir Rizvi, the issue of Yemen has come up now. Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah said that the U.S. and the U.K. are committing stupidity in the Red Sea in support of the apartheid regime of Israel. Now, was the attack on Yemen even more of a revelation that the U.S. fully supports the massacre in Gaza?
Absolutely. The United States is the direct player in this genocide. And I think it also goes to show that not only is Israel on trial internationally here, I think it's a trial of this so-called rules-based order that the United States tends to impose on all the countries around it, but itself refuses to follow. And I think you can also kind of see the UNSC kind of bear some responsibility here. We're 100 days in. There's been countless times where the UNSC has been called to, you know, reach a ceasefire resolution. They aren't able to protect the lives of 2.3 million Palestinians. But what the UNSC can do at the behest of the United States is protect Israeli economy, essentially. They passed the resolution condemning Ansarullah, condemning Yemen. And I know that Russia and China were both kind of, they didn't vote for it. They abstained. But it just goes to show that these international mechanisms are built for the United States ruling class. They're built to impose United States rule, and they won't actually act fairly. They won't actually be used to prevent any sort of massacre. The United States and the UK entering this is specifically showing not only are they only interested in preserving the Israel itself, which seems to be dwindling hour after hour, but they're only motivated by profiteering for their capitalist class. The Joe Biden administration specifically stated shipping delays as being the reason why they intervene. Now, we know that's only part of it, but they are a main player in this, and they are attacking Yemen, who is who's acting on behalf of the Genocide Convention, saying if you have the ability to stop a genocide, you have to do it. And the United States going against this clearly shows that they are, you know, the main players in the genocide. They're stopping the one country that's being able to, cripple the Israeli economy, and then they're arming the country that's actually, causing this genocide, while backing them completely politically. So the United States here is the key player. If there wasn't a United States, there wouldn't be an Israel.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Zafar Bangosh, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is coming under more pressure to step down amid the mounting criticism over his handling of the Gaza war. Thousands of Israelis have once again taken to the streets in Tel Aviv to slam Netanyahu for his failures in Gaza. And also earlier today, Hezbollah's Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said that the Israeli public opinion will no longer support this genocidal war on Gaza. This is all but the end for Benjamin Netanyahu, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, because Netanyahu knows that at the moment this war stops, he's going to go straight to prison. I mean, he was already facing criminal charges, and now he's being held responsible for not protecting the Israeli citizens because of Hamas's brilliant operation that was launched on October the 7th. Secondly, there are hundreds of Israeli prisoners that Hamas is holding, many of them military personnel, and their families are clamoring to get them out of captivity. Now, it's incredible to see that, you know, we need to keep in mind that Hamas and the Islamic resistance in Gaza has been treating these prisoners extremely humanely. These prisoners themselves, in their own interviews after they were released, have admitted that they were treated humanely and very nicely. Whereas the Zionists, who have taken thousands of Palestinians hostages before, you know, the escalation of activities, are probably something like 7,000 Palestinian prisoners. And since then, Israel has taken many more thousands from the West Bank. So altogether, there are probably something like 10,000 Palestinians that are languishing in Israeli prisons that are being tortured, humiliated. Some prisoners have been killed. So you can see the contrast between how the Palestinians are treating Israeli prisoners and how the Israelis are treating Palestinian prisoners. The Palestinian prisoners have actually been kidnapped from their homes. So in that sense, internally, there is a lot of pressure on Netanyahu because the families of these Israeli prisoners are demanding that Netanyahu take steps in order to get them out and to whatever concessions need to be made that he ought to make them. But as we know, the moment this war stops, there is a ceasefire, Netanyahu will definitely go to prison because there are a lot of people that are holding him responsible. In fact, you know, there was a survey done in which I think only 15% of the people support what Netanyahu has done. The rest are all opposed to him. So that gives us an indication.
Shabir Rizvi, talking about Benjamin Netanyahu, in a defiant statement earlier, he said that nothing can stop us, not even The Hague and not anybody else. What are your thoughts about that tone? It does sound like a maniacal war criminal who's not satisfied with the death of 10,000 innocent children.
Definitely. I mean, if I was a South African attorney, I'd be looking at these tweets and taking more notes. I mean, we see very clearly from the very start of this operation, and actually just even years prior, Benjamin Netanyahu is Israel. Whatever Israel claims, whatever their so-called opposition party claims that this isn't Israel, it's a complete lie. Benjamin Netanyahu is the face of what Israeli policies are. He's the face of the Israeli experiment, and he is out here specifically making these genocidal statements. He's telling you exactly who he is. And to go back to, you know, the charges at The Hague, if the charges of The Hague don't stick, when this man is clearly saying this, then I think that we need to kind of abandon looking at the ICJ and all these international appendages altogether, because the most important thing that you have to understand about this trial is intent. You can kill a million people, but if an attorney can't prove that you had the intent, then the genocidal charges won't stick. But Benjamin Netanyahu and his entire cabinet are out here telling you that they want to wipe out Palestinians from Gaza, that they want to expel them, that they want to destroy them and their families. The intent is clearly there, and these are blatantly genocidal intentions that he is airing out for the world to see. And I think this is a result of decades-long Israeli comfort that the United States will back them no matter what horrendous evil thing they do. The Israelis are now seeing that they have an international scope on them that's more critical than it's ever been. And instead of kind of, you know, walking it back, the only way that they see this is the only way that they see out is to go through with it, is to plant their feet down and stand their ground and say, yes, we are committing genocide. What are you going to do about it, without actually fragrantly saying that? And I think this is going to be a test of all of these different international institutions of whether they can intervene in the moment and actually do what needs to be done in order to stop a massacre from happening that's being displayed before our very eyes day after day.
Zafar Bangash, tens of thousands have gathered in central London recently in front of the parliament, voicing their support for Gaza. And similar pro-Palestine rallies were held in Indonesia, South Korea, Italy, among other countries. These demonstrations have been ongoing since the start of the Israeli onslaught. Is this the most isolated Israel has ever been because of this genocidal war?
As far as international public opinion is concerned, that's definitely the conclusion that we can draw. I mean, there have been literally hundreds of thousands of people demonstrating all over the world, including in the United States, in Canada, Britain, France. In fact, all of these regimes are dead against the Palestinian people. They are even actually criminalizing these protests, and yet people are defying them. So at the level of public opinion, definitely yes. What is obviously very disturbing is that these Western regimes, whether it's the United States, Britain, Germany, Canada, France, all of these regimes, they are backing the Zionist war criminals because they are their own kith and kin. I mean, we must understand that Israel is an illegitimate entity thrust into the heartland of Islam. This is a colonial settler entity that has been thrust there, and the Zionist rulers, whether it's the military or the politicians, are actually from the West. They don't belong to that land. And so this settler colonial entity, an illegitimate entity, has to be demolished. Only then we will have peace there. And as Shabir said, I don't think that these so-called international organizations are going to do it. I think the only solution is that the resistance front and other organizations must become more actively involved to put an end to this cancer that is in the heartland of the Muslim world.
And Shabir Rizvi, final thoughts from you as well. Is this the most isolated Israel has ever been?
Yes, I believe this is an existential crisis that if it doesn't finish off Israel by the end of this era here, by the end of this Palestinian operation, then it's definitely created a domino effect where I don't think Israel is going to survive the next decade. In fact, I don't think it's going to survive the 20s. They have proven that they are only reliant on the U.S. taxpayer in order to barely stand on their two feet. We have seen that, you know, 100 days in, just an hour ago, Palestinian resistance is still able to launch rockets into Tel Aviv. We have seen the internal crisis of Israel itself, where they're seeing, you know, demonstrations. Of course, it's settler-on-settler violence is what I call it. But as you can see, that they're against their own presidency right now. It's at an internal crisis and an external crisis. And these are the types of crises that basically highlight the end of whatever state you want to examine throughout history. This has been kind of the common theme that we see with anything here.
All right, thanks a lot. Jenabed Zafar Bangash, Director of the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, joining us from Toronto. And thanks to political commentator Shabir Rizvi, joining us from Chicago. And a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. Or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Al-Naqi means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawda'a al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malawi.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. I'm your host Mahdi. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was one of the pure fountainheads of knowledge and wisdom. He was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the son of the ninth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. And Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam himself was the tenth divinely appointed Imam from among the household of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. The ulama and the religious scholars and the fuqaha, the Islamic jurisprudence of the Shia, asked Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam about the different branches of knowledge while he was yet a very young child. And despite his young age, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered all of these great religious scholars and these great religious jurisprudents with the answers of an expert. It was these very answers of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam which made the Shia scholars and Shia jurisprudents and the other leaders of the Shia to believe